Big show for you here today. It is the Week 17 recap show. Chris Allen joins me to break down everything that we saw on Christmas, Saturday, the Sunday games. Tons to talk through with Chris. But before we get into that, solo recap of Sunday Night Football, electric game between the Niners and the Bears. Tons of standout performances. I'll break all of that down, both what you need to know from that game and going forward. Then, as I mentioned, Chris joins the show. Talk through our boom player of the week, Derrick Henry, legendary performance in Week 17. Some upsets, some things we didn't see coming, some lessons learned this week, and what to project going forward. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Week 17 is officially, well, other than Monday Night Football, it's in the books here. We have a big show coming up for you here today. Chris Allen joins me to break down everything that we have seen so far in Week 17. A very long Week 17. Christmas feels like 1,000 years ago. We had two games on Saturday. We had a packed Sunday slate. Chris joins me to break down all of that. But of course, before we get into that, we have to solo recap Sunday Night Football here. And what a magnificent game of offensive football it was. Niners 42, Bears 38. This one went all the way down to the end. The stat of the day here came from the official NFL account, just to encapsulate how this game went here. This was the first time in NFL history a regular season game had been tied at each of 7-all, 14-all, 21-all, 28-all, 35-all. I mean, it was just shot for shot for shot. These teams were scoring left and right. The scoring actually began, oddly enough, on a defensive touchdown, a pick six by the Chicago Bears defense was the first score of the day. And then the offenses just completely took over. Defense was optional in this one. And both of the offenses looked fantastic in this one. Let's dive into each of them piece by piece here. We'll, of course, start with the winners, as we always do. Let's talk about those San Francisco 49ers. As this offense has just been completely white hot, lights out, since they came back from their late Week 14 bye, which, you know, usually those late bye weeks are annoying. They're annoying in fantasy. I think Kyle Shanahan had some comments that he thought the Week 14 bye was even a little bit annoying for the San Francisco 49ers. I would kind of contend that it happened at the exact right time for this Niners team, because everybody, well, for the most part, Brock Purdy especially, was able to get back and get healthy. And man, Brock is just playing at an extremely high level right now. Again, he had the interception at the beginning of the game. Did he make another mistake after that? I'm sure if going back and watching the film, you'll be able to see, oh, there was a receiver he missed here, or, you know, an assignment that wasn't quite picked up the right way, a protection that he missed. All of that stuff, I think, is, you know, fair game. But for the most part, he was pretty damn near flawless outside of that. 300 passing yards on the day, 72.7% completion rate here for Brock Purdy. Three touchdowns through the air, two more on the ground. I mean, he's been a fantasy football monster here at the end of the season. And I just love watching this guy play. I've always been a Purdy apologist here. I've always been a guy that has really liked his game. Had him as a top 10 quarterback on our Football 301 top 10s in the offseason. And, you know, to me, I just really, really like watching him play. I think he is not the typical Shanahan paint by numbers quarterbacks, you know, and there was a weird narrative. It wasn't a loud narrative, but it was at least somewhat alive on the football internet that, you know, when Mac Jones was having a moment to start this year, it's like, is Brock Purdy, is his job in danger? Mac Jones, he's just out there. Is he outplaying what Brock Purdy was going to be doing? It's like, give me a freaking rest, people. Guys like Mac Jones and Jimmy Garoppolo in the past, these guys can come in and give you very much starting quarterback viable play behind center in Kyle Shanahan's offense, because they can be those extension of the coach on the field. They can be the joysticks where Shanahan points and they shoot. They pull the trigger on those plays. That's great. I think Mac Jones in the right system could be a starting NFL quarterback, at least a bridge guy. I think there's places next year, if the Niners are interested in trading him, where he could go and be that guy elsewhere. And that's fine. But there's just a different level that Purdy is able to access as a player. And you saw it a ton in this particular game. Six carries for 28 yards and two touchdowns. The scramble ability, the ability to make plays and throws on the move is just different than anybody else that's played for this offense. And he truly, like, it's not hard to see. It's not hard to see where he elevates the system, where he elevates the surroundings around him. I really do think that people, maybe because he was the final pick in the draft, or because we've seen, you know, insert random quarterback here, be productive with Kyle Shanahan before, they really missed the forest for the trees with Brock Purdy and just kind of overlooked the very easy ways in which you can see, like, yes, he does color inside the lines and do all the Shanahan quarterback stuff, but it's very clear where he elevates this offense. And I mean, the play that he made where he's scrambling around, he's moving back and forth, and he throws the touchdown to Juszczyk in the corner of the left, the front corner of the left end zone. That's a play that none of those other guys I just listed off here make. Those are the plays that they thought they might get from Trey Lance, and they got him from the quarterback that they drafted with the final pick in that very same draft. Like, bailed out of the Trey Lance failure by Brock Purdy. That's how good he's been. I mean, he really is like Tony Romo. Producer Colin and I were messaging about this during the game, and that's a comp I've thrown out for Brock Purdy previously. He is like Tony Romo. It's because he's smart, clearly knows the offense and everything like that, but he can also access things that the other guys can't because of his improvisational ability, his ability to scramble, his ability to just kind of pull a rabbit out of his hat. I really like Purdy. I'm a fan of his game. I'm a fan of when this offense is, not fully healthy, because George Kittle doesn't play in this game, and Trent Williams missed huge chunks of this game, but I'm a fan of when there are more dynamic pass catchers available in this offense than we have seen previously, and we saw that a ton here. Jake Tonjes was able to do kind of a George Kittle impersonation here, 9 targets for Tonjes in this one, 60 yards and a touchdown here. That was good to see. Obviously, if you had to, if you had George Kittle in your fantasy lineup and you were waiting, Tonjes proved to be a guy that you could viably stream. And again, he did a nice George Kittle impersonation here, just 6.1 air yards per target for Tonjes in this one, but he was able to come through and make some of those outlet plays. The wide receiver room was clearly led by Juwan Jennings, who had 31 routes, 81.6% route participation. He led the team in playing time. The guy who led the team in production was Ricky Pearsall, baby. Man, Ricky Pearsall was routing dudes up out there. Missed last week's game, of course, with an injury, even after it might have been his first or second catch on a pretty sick route along the left sideline. Got a little banged up there. I'm like, oh my God, please, Ricky, just don't get hurt. Just don't get hurt. And sure enough, he played the rest of the game here, was on the field for 71% of the snaps. And like I said, 79% route participation for Ricky Pearsall here, 2.83 yards per route as a pure outside receiver. Like, that's the interesting thing about Ricky Pearsall that, as a fantasy pick, he's obviously been a bit boom or bust because he's had these low scoring weeks when he was coming back from the injury. But for the most part, when he's been healthy, which has been very rarely, he's been productive. He hasn't had this monster fantasy ceiling. The one thing I would say that skill set wise, talent wise, I take back 0% of what I said about Ricky Pearsall. He's a guy that I'll be willing to believe in because predicting injuries is hard. And anytime someone tells you they can predict injuries, they're usually wrong about that. I was like, Chris Olave, he's certainly getting hurt again this year. He's about to play 17 games for the first time in his NFL career. You know, what if Ricky Pearsall does that next year? Obviously, concussions are different than some of the stuff that Ricky's dealt with, but nevertheless, point just stays out there. What if he stays healthy next year? I take back 0% of the talent evaluation for Ricky Pearsall. The one thing I may have, I definitely was wrong about was the role he might be playing in this offense. He's like a pure perimeter receiver. He's a vertical guy in this offense, averages 17 yards per reception tonight. He leads the team with a 39.5% air yard share, just again, 12.5% snaps in the slot. I thought he'd be moving around a little bit more. I thought he would play a more diverse role as the team's primary slot receiver. That has not been the case. He's been playing a ton of vertical X receiver. He's essentially just replaced Brandon Ayuk in this team's receiver core. I think Pearsall can play more than just X receiver. I actually think he could be more dynamic at different spots. I wonder if maybe if Jennings moves on in the offseason. Jennings scored again here in this one. He has 6 touchdowns over his last 5 games. He's just been automatic at finding the end zone, but it's not been a perfect season for Juwan Jennings. You think he might move on in free agency at the end of the year. If there is a guy he Could, you know, they replace him with someone who's more of a pure X receiver? Could that allow Pearsall to move around more in year three? I'm open to that. But again, Ricky Pearsall was awesome in this game. Great to see it. It was just an incredible Kyle Shanahan designed passing game, and Purdy was executing it with incredible precision. And then you got what you got in the ground game here for Christian McCaffrey. And it's hard to just say the ground game with McCaffrey, although he had a 41-yard long run, which was his longest of the season, 6.1 yards per carry, one of his most efficient days as a rusher. He also tacked on 6 targets, 23 carries, 6 targets. That now brings Christian McCaffrey up to 425 opportunities, intended touches on the season. That's targets plus carries. I tweeted this out towards the end of the game. We've had 15 running back seasons in which a running back, has logged 420 or more intended touches since 2000. Okay, 15 seasons that's happened since the year 2000. It's happened just 4 times since 2010. Obviously, teams don't use running backs like that. 2 of those 4 seasons have been Christian McCaffrey with 2 different ball clubs. He did it in 2019 with the Carolina Panthers, 429 opportunities. He did it this year, 425 with the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, shoot, how many opportunities is he going to get next Saturday? Because the Niners will be playing the Seahawks for the number one seed for the NFC West on Saturday here in this upcoming week, in week 18. How many opportunities is he going to get? He's going to sail past that 429 number. I knocked my mic over as I was saying that. I'm so excited about these Christian McCaffrey touches here. I mean, my God, like he's essentially just going to sail past that. Could he end up with 450? I mean, 25 opportunities. Shoot, he had friggin' 29 tonight. We get 30 next week. Still can't figure this mic out. So excited I am about this, okay? I mean, how many opportunities is he going to get in this upcoming game? He's going to sail past one of these numbers. He might have 450 plus. He might be top 5 in terms of opportunity-based seasons since the year 2000. Historic stuff for Christian McCaffrey. And again, another guy that, he's definitely getting hurt. He was hurt in August. Remember all the calf injury? Don't know about that. He's taking home a lot of fantasy football championships for people here in week 17. This game in general had to help a ton of people take home their fantasy football championships because we got so much, not just from the 49ers offense, which was brilliantly called, which was brilliantly executed, a ton of different players popping off here. We also, on the other side of it, got a great game out of the Chicago Bears. And of course, let's be clear here. Neither of these defenses are very good. The Niners offense might be so good that they could make a run with this defense. You know, there's some talk maybe Fred Warner could come back if they make the NFC Championship, if they make the Super Bowl, all of those games potentially if they win next week and they get that number one seed. Could it just all be in San Francisco, by the way? They could all be at home for the Niners. That'll be interesting with this defense, but they're going to have to win some shootouts in the playoffs. So will the Bears, because their defense obviously is another one. They're opportunistic. They get turnovers. They got a big turnover here tonight, but they're not able to consistently stop some of the best offenses in the league. We know that. They're not great in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback. That's a possibility here as we're looking at can the Bears make a run. But their offense has absolutely come together. And this is a night where you did not get a big rushing dominant game here from the Chicago Bears. I mean, certainly DeAndre Swift had a couple of moments. Kyle Manungai had a couple of moments. But you're not looking at this as one of those where, oh my God, they just took the game over on the ground. 42 pass attempts for Caleb Williams here in this game. That was super impressive to see him being the driving force of the offense. And it wasn't always consistent, shot to shot, down to down. But man, he made a lot of big time plays, threw the ball down the field in this game. Really impressive outing, in my opinion, for Caleb Williams in this one. Again, if we're looking at just the total dropbacks, it's one of his most of the season. If you're looking at pass attempts, it's one of the highest of the season. This was really a moment where they trusted him to be that guy, and he really executed it. I thought this was a really strong game from Caleb Williams. Again, you're gonna see the under 60% completion rate. That's part of it. You know, he's going to have 2-3 misses that he wants back in a game. Imagine if he starts connecting on those misses. Imagine if he stops sailing those. I mean, then we're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. The arm talent is truly there with him. He can whip that thing down the field. The touchdown to Colson Loveland was incredible. That was just heaves it down the field. He's got so much arm talent. You can just see why this staff really is into Caleb Williams and why they believe in him long term. I believe in Caleb Williams long term. And a lot of what we saw tonight was a big reason why. Again, not perfect. He's going to have a couple of those misses, but he also is able to throw the ball away because he's avoiding sacks this year at a much higher rate than he was last year. Again, I think he's just on the right track here. Let's break down some of these individual performances. As I mentioned with the run game, 6 yards per carry for DeAndre Swift, 4.8 for Kyle Manungai. I thought those guys had some nice runs, but it was the passing game here that really tells the story of this one, particularly two members of the passing game, which is the two rookies. Luther Burden and Colson Loveland were awesome tonight. They were just absolutely awesome. Let's talk about Colson Loveland here for a second, who big time night for Colson Loveland. He was able to be incredibly productive, 10 targets, led the team, 6 receptions for 94 yards. And that one touchdown, as I mentioned, he did have one drop on the night. I believe Chris Collinsworth said it was his first drop of the season. I do think he has the best hands on the team overall. So that was disappointing to see, but he made up for it with a number of big plays and a number of big catches. I think this guy is going to be one of the best tight ends in the league in the long run. I'm very excited about Colson Loveland. He's able to play in line. He's able to play in the slot. He's actually able to be a real threat out wide at times in certain packages. They don't overdo it there. You've seen other coaches try to overdo it with these generational tight ends and putting them out wide. It's only in certain packages and certain instances with Colson Loveland, and he actually makes the plays too. So really excited about him. Absolutely dynamic. Let's talk about Luther Burden here for a second. I'm still waiting on the full route data to see exactly how much he played in this game, but I'll tell you what, every time he was out there, he made an impact. He was incredible from the moment go, made big plays in this one, despite the fact that he was coming off an ankle injury that caused him to miss last week's game. I'm just so high on Luther Burden. I think he's going to be awesome for this team. And, you know, there's fantasy football folks that are constantly whining and complaining about his, you know, lack of usage in the offense at times at the beginning of the year. I'm telling you guys, it's a good thing. It is going to be worth the wait. Okay. Like, go back to the prospect profile for Luther Burden. This is a guy who, in my opinion, this is my evaluation of him. And I think this was shared by other folks. And honestly, I think it was pretty obvious to see on film. He was a guy that needed work. He was not just a gadget player, which is what he was labeled as because of some of his usage, but he was a guy where there were work ethic concerns. There were like technical concerns. He wasn't always right and tight in his details in terms of being in the right place where he needed to be in zone coverage and making those plays consistently. He was not a reliable receiver. But when he got drafted by the Chicago Bears, and this, like, these videos are up on my YouTube channel. Like, I had these conversations with James Coe for Reception Perception after he was drafted. That I thought that was the perfect spot for him because this is a coaching staff that was going to push him. They were going to be really hard on Luther Burden to make sure he was right and tight on those details. And I think you've just seen a player who has just been doing this, trending up all throughout the season with what they've asked him to do, his own individual play. So yeah, like he was not an immediate day one. He's on the field every single snap, whatever. But the yards per route are really indicative there that when he was getting the opportunities and they slowly put more and more on his plate at the beginning of the year, it's a lot of screens, design stuff. Tonight, it's big boy routes. You know, you just watch it on broadcast, so you don't know for sure. But to me, it looked like a lot of real deal big boy plays. And you've seen more and more and more of that. Like, there are still some times where I think he needs to, like, he's not as good in man coverage as Roma Dunze, which is why I think Dunze has been the one on this team when he's been healthy. But, like, going into 2026, I think it's pretty live that, like, it's maybe a toss-up between those two guys as to who is going to be better. From a production standpoint, I think Luther Burden might be a better fit in terms of getting the layups, like the screens, just get the ball in his hands and let him run off to catch. I think he's definitely better in that phase of the game than Roma Dunze. And I love Roma Dunze. He is one of my favorite receivers in the league in terms of just the technique in which he runs his routes and the way he approaches the game. but I think there's a real chance that Burton is better. Like, Burton's a prospect I also really liked and wanted to be aggressive on again when he landed with the Chicago Bears. He's a guy I have, at least I'm trying to have higher ranked in consensus in Dynasty. Like, these two guys I think are going to be an awesome receiving tandem for the Chicago Bears team that I just want to be very much invested in 2026. So, you know, definitely going to get a lot of questions. I'm sure it's going to be a big talking point in the offseason. Like, who's the one on this team? Is it Rome or is it Luther Burton? The answer to me is yes. Like, take Chicago Bears players in 2026 and beyond, because I think we'll see if DJ Moore is on the team next year. Moore had a very disappointing night tonight. If you started him in fantasy, he was sick, downgraded to questionable with an illness Sunday morning. So was Alameda Zacchaeus, who didn't play in this game, which allowed Jahdae Walker to actually still play a little bit of a decent role here. So, you know, that obviously was frustrating if you played DJ. I still think he's had these nice moments towards the end of the year. I'm guessing he's not going to be on the team next year. Cole Kmet, we'll see about that. Like, I really think this could be it could go from a, kind of crowded situation here to maybe a little bit consolidated between three players. I mean, it's way too early to be saying that for sure. But if it's consolidated in 2026 to Rome Odunze, Luther Burton, Colson Loveland, like flop the order however you want it. Caleb Williams, year two of the offense, year three in the NFL overall. Ben Johnson cooking like he was cooking tonight. I mean, shoot, that's an offense I want to be exposed to here. But yeah, Luther Burton, again, hit huge night tonight. It was awesome to see. Really excited about him. The two things to note, did have one bad drop on the final drive. It ultimately was his final target of the night. So he goes 9 targets, 8 catches, 138 yards. Yeah, who cares? Like, it was a third down. I get it. You got to catch that. There's been a lot of plays like that for Bears wide receivers. Odunze definitely put a lot of those, like, you got to catch that play, but you just keep going back to these young guys, keep feeding into them. Don't worry about, oh my gosh, one bad drop, whatever, who cares? Like, he made more plays than he left on the field. The other concern is that he was injured in the end zone on the final play. It looked like he might have gotten run into by one of the Niners defenders as Caleb Williams was scrambling around. Ben Johnson didn't have an update on Burton as of the time we're taping this here around midnight Eastern on Sunday, so that is just worth tracking. This note here from Lester Whitthong, I believe, says that Burton was taking questions in his locker room after the game. So maybe that's a positive sign for Luther Burton. So it definitely felt like one of those can't put the genie back in the bottle performances for Luther Burton, who is going to be very, very good. Somebody I want to be high on going forward. Want to be high on this Bears team overall. Both of these teams, man. It was really exciting to watch this one. And what a perfect way to end Sunday Fantasy Football Championship Week, a good old-fashioned shootout where these teams went point for point for point. It was pretty exciting to watch. I really enjoyed this game. Really enjoyed the show as well that we've got coming up for you. We are going to take a quick break. We come back on the other side. Chris Allen joins me to break down everything else that we saw in Week 17. The Christmas game, Saturday, Sunday, tons to talk through. We'll get into that right after this. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is Chris Allen. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
We couldn't just have a normal Week 17. I don't even know what that means, actually, to be quite honest with you. There's no way we could end the fantasy season with just something nice and easy to send us off into the offseason, or I guess the playoffs for the regular folks that are going to be watching the games in January. But still, we get nothing but chaos to end this game between the Bills and the Eagles. But nah, man, after between Christmas, Saturday games, and now we get all of this. I mean, I don't even know how we get into recapping all of these games, but let's give it a shot.
Yeah, that's the appropriate way to set up this recap show. We are going to give it a shot to recap Week 17 because what a whiplash this week has been between the fact that we had three games, in quotations, we had three football games that took place on Christmas. We had two Saturday games. We had a packed early slate today. And then we come to a screeching halt with two games in the late windows, one of which was a completely bizarre affair for the number one overall pick between the Giants and the Raiders. And the other one was an even more bizarre affair between two supposed contenders who just put up some ugly, ugly performances in the rain. We're going to get into all of that. We have a ton to recap here. We're going to do it in our usual format here. In the first segment, we talk about the games that we care about the most, plus the boom and bust players of the week. Second segment, those are the games that we sort of care about. And then the third segment, the games that could have been an email. And spoiler alert, we are going to wrap all three of the Christmas games into that particular segment, because my God, all three of the, I could have done with an email for that. Chris, I truly could have just done with an email on Christmas. Like, hey, Roger Goodell, send me the box scores, you know, Yahoo Fantasy. Let me know what the fantasy results are here. I'm fine. We probably could have just had an email for the holiday slate.
Yeah, if anything, Goodell just gave us all a lump of coal on the 25th instead of just giving us actual games with the number of backup quarterbacks that we were having to watch. And then especially for the people that had, I guess, rooting interest from their fantasy matchups, you get brutal performances from some wide receiver ones. But yeah, we'll get into all that here in just a bit.
Let's start it off, however, as we always do, with our boom and bust player of the week. And I'm going to bring up the vibe here for our boom player of the week. How could it be anybody else other than King Henry himself? Derrick Henry scores 45.6 fantasy points in the Fantasy Football Championship, 216 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns, the best game of his season. He saved it all until the very end there. I don't want to hear any whining about, well, Derrick Henry managers are all in the consolation bracket. That drives me crazy. Field a team, compete. Okay, get to this point in the season. You could have absolutely done that with Derrick Henry. He had over 1,600 rushing yards this season, and it felt like a weird kind of quiet season for Derrick, or 1,600 total yards. Maybe I'm mistaken on that. But regardless, he ended up with a great final stat line, even if it felt like kind of a down season for Derrick Henry, which, Chris, I think that just goes to show you what a legendary player that Derrick Henry is, was, maybe will be until we're all dead and 6 feet into the dirt, because that is just how much sustainability Derrick Henry has to his game.
If anything, I feel like he is just the second coming of Frank Gore, where we just keep thinking year in and year out, there's just no way that he can continue to do this. And then he does something like this where it's just, oh, okay, well, I have Derrick Henry on my roster, I'm going to win. Or I'm facing Derrick Henry, let me just shut the laptop, let me just move on over to just figure out what else is going on with the family today. Let me get some laundry and stuff done, or do some other things around the house, because I don't need to worry about my fantasy matchups anymore. Because that's really how simplistic it was. I mean, you just mentioned his 216 yards against the Packers. Obviously, the folks will probably already know this, but it's the most that any running back has done against the Packers all season. And that's even, that goes past what Jahmyr Gibbs did, because he put 130 on him earlier in the season. So it's just completely blowing all of the expectations out. And this was in a game where, yeah, the vibes were going to be pretty bad for the Ravens with Lamar Jackson not playing in this game. But still, to see him doing this, especially in this week with all eyes on the Ravens and fantasy managers looking for a big performance, I mean, King Henry delivered like no one else can.
Man, it's such a great point, too. The fact that this game happened on Saturday, you know, if you played Derrick Henry, again, you never give up. You never want to, you know, totally give up hope or anything like that. But you could have probably just gone ahead and made some other plans on Sunday. Hey, get some points with your significant other. Hey, let's go out on a date on Sunday. Let's do something with the kids. Any chores you need? I know it's Fantasy Football Championship week, but no big deal. That's fine. I don't have to watch football today. I'll just check in on the app, even though in the back of your mind you knew it was all but over because you played Derrick Henry in your fantasy football championship. Yeah, again, Derrick Henry on the season, 1,469 rushing yards, 16 rushing touchdowns. And again, what has at times felt like a little bit of an up and down season by Derrick Henry. And this has kind of been my contention all year long. I've watched Derrick Henry. I don't think I've seen anything wrong with him. I just think that the Baltimore Ravens offense has had some issues, and we'll unpack those when we get to this game. But yeah, it was electric to see a signature performance by one of the best running backs to ever play this game, by just someone that I say this a lot. I'm going to talk about it a little bit later. I love Derrick Henry. I think he's going to go down as one of my favorite players in this like era of that I've been covering professional football. So it was awesome to see him do this. Unfortunately, none of my Derrick Henry teams did make it to the fantasy championship. No, so I couldn't. I had that whole soliloquy up at the top, but both of them lost in the semifinals, which was also just one last funny note on this game. Chris, didn't it feel like the Ravens called this game like an apology to Derrick Henry, where there was this whole national talking point last week about the Ravens didn't give the ball to Derrick Henry in the last almost 13 minutes of the game that they ended up blowing in week 16. And from the minute goes, like, we are going to remind everybody that we are aware that Derrick Henry is on our football team. That's how they called that game on Saturday night.
Oh, 100%. And kind of to your point, you could almost see after the first few carries, there ain't nothing wrong with Derrick Henry. It's just more about entire offense and even some concerns about what that defense has looked like throughout the course of the season. And we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But yeah, I mean, nothing wrong whenever he gets the rock. So yeah, for sure, seeing him still be able to carry that type of workload and then also produce like that, I mean, it's still just so fun to watch. Even as a Bengals fan, I mean, seeing him be able to do this at this age is just amazing to me.
Our bust player of the week, unfortunately, goes to Carolina Panthers rookie wide receiver Tetero McMillan, who has had a really nice rookie season, has had a last nice couple of weeks here. But, man, 1 point. Yes, correct. A point in the fantasy football championship week for here for Tetero McMillan. And, you know, I mean, almost kind of hard to blame him on this one. I got to go back and watch this game, of course. We'll talk about the Panthers passing game later on. But just real quick off the top here, the leading receiver for the Carolina Panthers today was Jalen Coker with 16 yards. So not a lot of passing yards to go around for the Panthers against the Seahawks. Awesome defense in a game where also Tetero McMillan was almost a game day inactive here because I think he came in with an illness on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and just a tough showing for Bryce Young. I mean, pressured on almost 40% of his dropback. So we knew going up against the Seattle defense, it was going to be something of a tough out for not just Bryce Young, but any of the pass catchers with how stiff that their secondary has been throughout the course of the season. So I'm not too terribly surprised. Hope for maybe an explosive pass here or maybe a couple of move the chains, tough catch like type moments for Tetero McMillan. But again, in that type of atmosphere, it was just kind of a hard thing to expect coming into this matchup. And I mean, the stats really bear it out in terms of how tough it was for Bryce Young. And then, of course, on the flip side of some of those passes, Tetero McMillan not really able to reel in some of those catches that we really hoped he would. But still, kind of to your point, solid rookie season for McMillan. But it's just with the up and down nature of that entire offense, and now going up against a tough defense, it's getting hard to expect for him to really produce at least get to the point where we would expect him to at least hope to get enough fantasy viable production out of McMillan.
All right, we'll talk about that game in depth a little bit more later. But for now, let's get into the games that we care about most here from Week 17. And let's spin it back to Saturday for our first two games off the bat here. Let's first talk about Texans 20, Chargers 16. The Texans, we'll talk about them first because they won this game. They have clinched a playoff berth. Despite starting 0-3 this season, the Houston Texans will be going to the NFL playoffs. And Chris, I don't know how you felt watching this game. I watched this on Saturday, actually, at a restaurant just up the street here. And right away, when the Texans got up to a 14-0, or a 14, they got up 14 points here, and it was on two almost identical looking deep post routes to the two Iowa State wide receivers against zone coverage. CJ Stroud, by the way, completed 15 of 20 attempts against zone coverage here. And this is a really good Chargers defense in zone coverage for 229 yards and two touchdowns. He did throw in one interception. When they went up early like that, I just thought immediately, not good for the Chargers here, because we know what's waiting on the other side. And we'll talk about them here in a moment. But I wouldn't say that the Texans offense wowed me in this one, but they made those two plays right away, and they were able to just hang on to that lead for the rest of the day.
Yeah, that was the most surprising part. I had at least some, I'd say, confidence that CJ Stroud would at least be able to complete enough passes, keep the offense moving, either between the run and pass game enough such that they would pull out this win just off of the backs of Houston's defense. But not like that. I mean, seeing, I know you probably had to have been happy to see Jalen Noel actually score that touchdown, because that's been one of the rookies you've been trying to get at least opine or at least get to the point where he's getting some more pass catching volume on a week in, week out basis. But seeing this type of performance out of CJ Stroud was definitely not what I expected. But on the flip side, having to see Justin Herbert continue to fight behind his offensive line and put into a negative game script, that's where you see the results that you get for Herbert. But hopefully, I mean, I know Harbaugh was talking after that game that there's some things that they want to clean up, but I don't know how you clean up a quarterback that's getting pressured on over 40% of his dropbacks almost weekly. So there's a kind of a tall order to ask, especially now when the play gets elevated, the stakes are higher now. I really don't see how much they can change between now and once they get into the postseason.
Yeah, let's stick on the Chargers here. We'll come back to the Texans, and because they're more of almost like a next year conversation and everything like that. I think the Chargers are the more interesting one for the rest of 2025 here, going into the playoffs and everything like that. Yeah, what are you going to clean up here? Jim. I mean, yeah, there's plenty I'd love to clean up. I'd love to get my ass back in the time machine and bring Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt back to this offensive line. Other than that, other than time travel, I don't know, or scientific miracles here, I don't know what you're going to do about this situation. Next Gen Stats had that Justin Herbert was pressured on 38% of his dropbacks. So again, it depends on what source you're looking at. Here's the deal. Watch the football game. Justin Herbert was harassed all evening here, yes, by this Texans defense, as we expected it to be. Again, more from Next Gen Stats. When he was under pressure, Herbert took 5 sacks, completed just 4 of 10 attempts for 32 yards and an interception. When he was kept clean, Herbert completed 17 of 22 for 204 yards and a touchdown. It really is just as simple as that, man. And again, just talking about early on, like when they flashed the graphic, Bobby Hart starting at left tackle has not started at left tackle since the 2022 season with the Buffalo Bills. I immediately just like, yikes. Woof. Like, what? Woof. What are we going to do here? And I mean, Chris, it wasn't just pressure that the Chargers faced in this game. It was immediate, instant, the play is over pressure. So when we're talking about these wide receivers, like Quentin Johnson made a couple of big plays. He went over 90 yards again. That was good to see for him. Ladd McConkey, obviously a super disappointing game on what is probably what is definitely a disappointing season for Ladd McConkey. He's probably going to come in under 900 receiving yards this year. Right now, he leads the team with 789. Everybody is kind of bunched in that 700 to 790 yard range at the wide receiver position. It's QJ with 735. It's Ladd with 789. And then it's Keenan Allen with 741. Keenan leads the team with 74 receptions. Think of what we were talking about back in week one, when it was like, oh man, this wide receiver trio is so legit, and it's going to just, they're just going to be tearing it up all season. Now it's like, you're lucky if you can get one guy to have a good game out of this receiver room. And to me, we can look for deeper meaning and we'll do that in the offseason. But to me, it's just, you can't get anything done behind this offensive line unless you're playing against a fake defense like the Cowboys last week.
Oh, 100%. And I think somebody tweeted it out during the game. There was just no better encapsulation of Justin Herbert's season, where he drops back, immediate pressure, evades two or three guys, throws it over to Aronde Gadsden, and then he pops up in the air and it turns into an interception. I mean, that's just everything that's happened to them throughout the course of the season. You could just sum up in just that one sequence where he is just having to fight behind that line of scrimmage on almost every single dropback. And without his pass catchers really hauling in the pass or dropping a pass or not being able to convert the chains, I mean, it has placed a lot of the onus on his shoulders in order for them to continue to move the chains. So I think one of the, I guess the only real thing that I've taken away pretty much all from this entire season is that he still wants to try and attack downfield. And yes, it's nice to see Keenan Allen continue to be something of a man coverage beater, allow them to still convert on third downs when they need to. But Quentin Johnston and even Trey Harris, I'm thinking about for next season, if this is going to be more of a thing where, let's say they get, I mean, assuming they have Rashawn Slater back, assuming Joe Alt is back healthy next season, him still at least trying to rip the ball downfield, is even when he is under pressure. I mean, those two guys, I think, are going to be one of the larger beneficiaries of those types of situations for Justin Herbert. Whereas Ladd McConkey, yeah, I think there are going to be some better days ahead or better seasons ahead for him for right now. But still looking at how Justin Herbert likes to play when he's under pressure, I mean, those guys trying to hit some of those deep shots, I mean, that just seems to be his tendency for right now. And that's where you see these big games for QJ.
Such a huge departure from what Justin Herbert was in Joe Lombardi's offense, when it was just check down, check down, check down over and over again. So it's just a reminder that, you know, quarterbacks have tendencies. Of course, they have preferences and everything like that, but a lot of it does come down to personnel around you. And of course, so, you know, like what the offensive coordinator and the offensive architect wants to do, which is kind of why I think this team has been so herky jerky behind a bad offensive line. I just don't think that Greg Roman has the pass concepts available to them to kind of get a more consistent offense here. Both of these teams are going into the playoffs, so we'll see them plenty over the next few weeks here, or at least we'll see them at least two more times, once in the playoffs and once in week 18. Just real quick on the Texans offense, wanted to just mention, like, those Iowa State rookie wide receivers made plays here. Jalen Knoll only ran a route on a 28.6% of the dropbacks. Jaden Higgins was 50% here. So this room is going to be really interesting to talk about in the offseason, Chris, when we get some of these veterans out of the mix here. Like, I don't think Christian Kirk is back on this team next year. Maybe Xavier Hutchinson, you know, he's still on a rookie deal, I believe, so he might be around, but will his role be reduced when these guys are in year two? I'm excited about this passing game with those guys potentially flanking Nico Collins in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, and you have to assume that C.J. Stroud also starts to get a little bit more comfortable behind that offensive line. They make some changes and add some depth or even just some better starters for there, so he's not under duress as often in 2026. So I'm completely with you there. I mean, yeah, Dalton Schultz is a nice role player. I mean, obviously safety blanket for C.J. Stroud. But with Nico still playing the primary wide receiver in that offense, I would say those two guys flanking him, Higgins playing more of that flanker position, and then maybe having Noel as your full-time slot guy. I can really see that taking off from a pass catching standpoint in 2026.
All right, let's move to the next game here, the Saturday night game. Ravens 41, Packers 25. Of course, we already talked about, Packers 24. We already talked about the big story here of this game, which was, of course, Derrick Henry. Couple more stats here on Henry and just how insane this game was. Again, season high 36 rush attempts, season high 216 rushing yards, of course, four touchdowns, all season high. Henry totaled 108 yards on both inside and outside runs in this game. He now has four such games in his career, according to Next Gen Stats. No other running back has even had one such game since 2016. So it's December, man. It's cold. People don't want to be tackling Derrick Henry when it's cold outside, and that we definitely saw a lot of that. Valentine or was it Nixon that just got stiff-armed into next century? It was one of those nights for Derrick Henry against the Packers defense.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm more the one to try and buck any of the weather narratives, but trying to tackle Derrick Henry once you get into December, no, I don't think anybody wants any of that. Yeah, and watching him stiff, whichever Packers defender that was, right into the shadow realm just really goes to show, I mean, this is a guy that once he gets that first couple of steps, right, because we've seen a number of times where if you get Derrick Henry in the backfield, trip him up a little bit, he's not going to create those gains. But once he gets past the line of scrimmage and he has a head of steam on him, I mean, just completely look out and maybe make a business decision if you have to, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, 100% make that business decision. I've always joked that because my favorite character to play on Mario Kart N64, only Mario Kart that I'm playing, by the way. I'm not playing on you friggin'
Nintendo it's Bowser,
Switch
isn't it?
Or any of that stuff. Okay. It's Bowser. Yeah, it's my favorite character, and I've always compared it to Derrick Henry because it's just like you said. When you can get Derrick Henry behind the line, he's not gonna necessarily juke you out or make crazy stuff, but man, you get him running ahead of steam, he's going to knock you. Oh,
I like to play as Toad. I like to play as Yoshi.
He's going
to
knock you off the path. Okay. I don't even need a turtle shell. I've got one on my freaking back. And that is Derrick Henry. When he gets that head of steam, when he gets that lane here, you saw that so many times on Saturday night. And man, I always just like to talk about two things with Derrick Henry. One, shout out to my old buddy, Matt Franciscovich, Matt Franchise from the NFL Network, who texted me on Saturday. He said, it's almost been a decade since our Derrick Henry adventure. And what he was referring to that is that after a Dave Matthews concert in Irvine, California, when we may or may not have been sober returning back to our hotel room, we turned on NFL Network and it was Raiders versus Titans preseason. And there was just this monstrous human being wearing number 2 deep in the preseason game against the Raiders, just taking souls, shredding people left and right. And I said to Franchise, like, yep, it's been almost 10 years. Might be another 10 years that he's still doing this. He's going to be doing this way after we're expired, buddy. I'll tell you that.
Oh, 100%. And it wasn't just Derrick Henry also getting there as a rusher and getting into his game a bit more. I mean, Tyler Huntley also showing up from a rushing standpoint as well. I know he had to leave that game around. It was somewhere in like the third quarter. Had to go out and get probably another injection because of the shoulder pain that he was experiencing. But still, I mean, seeing him play as well as he did, I mean, connecting with Zay Flowers, also Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely. I mean, Zay Flowers finally getting into the end zone again. I mean, so the passing game along with that running game as well, I think that was enough to really cement at least the thought that, yeah, Lamar Jackson, it'd be great to see him under center there, but if you got Tyler Huntley, things don't go as bad, especially with Derrick Henry running the ball.
Well, the Ravens, because the Steelers lost today, they will be competing in Week 18 against those Pittsburgh Steelers for the AFC North division title. So the Ravens are certainly still alive here for the playoff race. team that is going to the playoffs and is locked into the seventh seed in the NFC. That's Green Bay Packers, a team that lost this one. And they lost this game because the Ravens essentially dominated the first half time of possession. I mean, how many plays did the Packers even run in the first half? It was not very many. However, a big part of that was because their quarterback, it was not Jordan Love, it was Malik Willis, was throwing heaters down the football field. I mean, Malik Willis here, listen, you got to take your hat off to the guy. He played an awesome game here. He had to leave at one point and go to the locker room probably to get an injection on his shoulder. It was wild here. Malik Willis, he on downfield throws in this game, 20 plus air yards, completed 6 of 7 for 197 yards and a touchdown. Third most deep passing yards by a quarterback in a game this season, according to Next Gen Stats. He also, again, 22 yards and a touchdown on 2 designed runs, 39 yards and another touchdown on 5 scramble attempts. I started Malik Willis in a Superflex championship game this weekend, and then I walked into Sunday feeling like, hey, boys, just don't screw it up. Okay, don't screw it up. Malik Willis is taking us to a title here.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, this was also in a game where they weren't going to get much out of the running game. I know some folks wound up starting Josh Jacobs because he was active, kind of reading the tea leaves with how much he had been talking about the knee swelling in previous weeks, how banged up he was coming into this game. I wasn't expecting a ton out of the Packers running game. So this really was going to be a lot on Malik Willis from a throwing standpoint. And whether it was Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, I mean, I was really hoping to see a bit more out of Luke Musgrave, but still, he had that whole Packers offense from almost start to finish put on his back and for trying to keep them in this game. And whether it was him rushing or for him throwing, I mean, yeah, I know you and I talked last week about Malik Willis as the potential quarterback or free agent quarterback that a lot of folks or a lot of teams should be looking at. And after watching him play this game, yeah, they wound up losing because Derrick Henry puts up over 200 scrimmage yards. But overall, I would think that without having Jordan Love in this game, seeing how well that whole offense was still able to operate without their rushing component to it, I mean, I think Malik Willis, he probably played himself into a pretty solid contract in 2026.
Oh, I think he should at least be somebody that gets a shot to compete in camp. And, you know, we were talking about it on Fantasy Football Live this morning. Joel brought this up, that just there's not a lot of appealing quarterbacks on the free agent market or in the NFL draft. Like, there is going to be a few teams here that need to get creative to find a QB1 next year. And Malik Willis has shown as well as anybody to be one of those guys. And, you know, it seems like he's coming out of nowhere, but he was a third round draft pick by the Tennessee Titans. And I know he was not good in Tennessee, but he was a guy who was playing at freaking Liberty. Okay. Like, down the street from where I went to college in Lynchburg, Virginia, at freaking Liberty. Okay. Like, he was not coming from some power school where it's like, oh, he's ready to play in the NFL. He was definitely not ready for the speed of the NFL. And you could see that immediately, but these last two games and several other times he's gotten into the field for the Green Bay Packers, you've seen a guy that the game has kind of slowed down for him. So I think that this is going to be a really fun off-season discussion. Obviously, LaFleur is doing a lot of help here. He's doing a lot to get Malik Willis up to speed to play at the NFL level for sure. But there are other coaches around the NFL. Like, I keep coming back to the Dolphins, man. I know they've got the big Tua albatross contract. They'll have to maybe get creative there. But at the same time, that would look pretty fun. Like Malik Willis with that Dolphins team. But there are several others that I think will consider him as well.
Yeah, I really like that idea of having him down there with the Dolphins. I mean, trying to see, because remember, this was just how many years ago when it was, how creative is this 49ers running game? And that was with Mike McDaniel kind of calling a lot of those plays and making sure that the running game and the passing game was complementing each other. And now if he were to have a guy like Malik Willis, who, yeah, to your point, last season when Jordan Love had to miss a few games, the Packers, they went really into their shell in terms of their pass rate over expectation. It was negative double-digit percentage in terms of how often they were running the ball versus passing the ball. You can see here now in this completely different game script, a little bit more up-tempo, a few more passing attempts, and not having to, or at least not being able to rely on their running game. And we still saw a clean game out of Willis as a passer with the bum shoulder as well. So yeah, I would say even if he does get a change of scenery, the hope would be that it would be with one of those more progressive play callers, and Mike McDaniel being one of them.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, I root for Justin Fields. I think he's a good guy. Every time I talk to him, seems like somebody that people really like. But I mean, if Justin Fields can get that contract this offseason, you know, why can't Willis, based on what we've seen, get a contract something like that, where it's just, okay, you're our bridge quarterback. We're trying to compete for a couple years and stay above the baseline here with Malik Willis as our quarterback. I think that there could be some team there waiting. And yeah, you mentioned that Josh Jacobs thing stinks, but this is just one of those situations where he probably shouldn't have been out there, like, period, end of story. So if you started Josh Jacobs in week 17, sorry, it stinks. It stings. It is what it is. Don't really know what else to say about it. Let's go on to the next game here. This is Eagles 13, Bills 12. We talked about it up at the top. This was a bizarre football game. I probably have more to say about the Bills, but let's start with the Eagles because they did nominally win this game. They have one more point than the Buffalo Bills at the end of the football game, so that means they win here. But did this game feel like a win to you? This stat from Robert Mays, I think, perfectly encapsulated what happened here with this Eagles offense, that it definitely had some moments in the first half, which was great. However, according to True Media, Robert Mays notes, there has been 10 games this season where a team had fewer than 5 passing yards and a half. The Eagles have 3 of those 10 games. Jalen Hurts did not complete any of his 7 passes in the second half of the Eagles week 17 win against the Buffalo Bills. And he was sacked once. So it was a complete, Boone was dead right about this game, by the way. I mean, I barely remember it because it was so long ago that we previewed this slate of games early at the beginning of the week here, but he called this as it's going to be a sloppy, ugly weather game. And it was a sloppy, ugly weather game. And the Eagles were just as ugly as the team they beat in the second half.
Yeah, and that was the thing. In the earlier parts of the game, we could see some play action shot plays to A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, and of course, Dallas Goedert getting the touchdown. A few off-tackle runs for Saquon Barkley. The offense showed a bit of rhythm in the first half. But in the second half, nothing was seeming to work. Nothing but punts for the Eagles offense throughout the entirety of the second half. It's just punt, 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 punt. They had 5 or 6 possessions, all ending with punts. And then, of course, they get to kneel out the game, or get the end of the game after the Bills don't get the 2-point conversion. So just a bizarre, and also the play calling as well, because once they got into those long down and distance situations, Kevin Petullo still opting to call for runs, quarterback draw plays, the things like that, where it's just, you could still pass the ball. I know that the rain was still coming down in the third and fourth quarter, but A.J. Brown was still out there running routes, still had other options in the short area of the field, whether it was going to be Dallas Goedert or even try a couple of targets to Saquon Barkley. It just seemed like they were hoping that the Bills continue to shoot themselves in the foot from an offensive standpoint. But of course, Josh Allen mounts a comeback, at least as best as he can, to score 2 quick touchdowns towards the end of the game. But still, I just thought it was not like poor play calling from the Eagles. And also, I'd say some just bizarre, or I guess untimely execution from the Eagles because of, a drop by Devonta Smith, or not even really a drop. It was just a catch, but overturned by the officials. So just untimely calls that from the Eagles standpoint as well, that kind of led to them, having to really hope that the Bills wouldn't pull out the win there.
I think you nailed this perfectly here, which is that the Eagles were just content to say, all right, we've got the lead. The Bills are just constantly shooting themselves in the foot on the other side of it. Let's just sit on this thing. And I just hate that they call plays that way, but they've been doing that all season long. I don't think that they're going to change, because guess what? I mentioned that they have 3 of those 10 games. They've won all 3 of those games, by the way, where they've had fewer than 5 yards in a half. So they have no reason. I think they've got a lot of reason to maybe consider changing, but that just hasn't happened, and I don't think it will happen the rest of the way here. Let's talk about those Bills, because Josh Allen definitely made some hero plays late in this game trying to mount a comeback, which, that's like what the Bills have to have here. Like, the Eagles, for the most part, kept James Cook bottled up. He didn't have any big long runs here. Josh Allen clearly was not 100% in this game. He definitely looked like he was playing through pain. I don't know if you saw the same thing. And that was pretty much it. Like, Josh Allen, there was nothing going on in this passing game. And I said this on social media. I was like, it is shocking and yet not shocking at the same time that this passing game is completely toothless unless Josh Allen just plays like an alien. And he was not playing like an alien for large parts of this game. He had some moments. He was 6 of 9 on passes of 10 plus air yards in this game for 154 yards, which, that was great. That was it. Like, they had to make those insane plays otherwise, there was nothing going on here in this Bills passing game, which is not a shock. Like, look at the players on the roster.
Exactly. We were talking about it this morning on FF Live. It's just having to rely on these wide receivers in order to make plays. Yes, they can come turn up for a few explosives here and there. Cool to see Brandon Cooks catching the ball downfield. Tyrell Shavers coming up with a big play that they needed in order to cap off a touchdown in order to get them within a score. I mean, yeah, those guys will allow for those type of big gains down the field when you need them. But they also need to have those just down-to-down consistency, down-to-down efficiency that's just not there. And the tweet that you wrote, nobody opened downfield, you could hear that. I mean, KB and Tom Brady were talking about that during the game mm-hmm. multiple times. It's just, here's Josh Allen dropping back, nobody opened downfield. And then, of course, he either eats a sack or tries to create something on his own. It wasn't until, or like, honestly, outside of the passes to Dawson Knox for a first down, or even to either the running backs, that you would see some level of rhythm to that offense. But when it's trying to rely on his receivers, especially in obvious passing situations, I mean, you could just feel the frustration, if not from the offense itself, but from the rest of the Bills mafia having to watch this, because it's watching their quarterback taking a number of those hits, especially when they know he's banged up with the foot injury.
Yeah, and Bills fans are starting to do the thing where it's like, well, Josh Allen's not playing well. And I agree. It's like he wasn't perfect in this game. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they win this game if he hits that pretty layup pass to Khalil Shakir in the end zone for the 2-point conversion. Like, he definitely is not going to come out of this game thinking like, I played perfect, and nor should he. He didn't. So there's that. And they're also doing the like, well, this is like how much of it is the scheme? And I just keep saying, like, dude, this is Occam's razor, baby. The simplest explanation is the one that makes sense. It's the players. Like, it's at least 90% the players. And I'm not even some big, like, Joe Brady honk. Like, oh, man, I love Joe Brady scheme, man, that stuff. Just like, there's no scheming around this group of pass catchers. There's no just, like, let me flip to page 5 of the playbook and just push the scheme freaking Josh Palmer, Tyrell Shavers open play. I mean, that just doesn't exist. Point proven, in my opinion, is like Joe Brady was the offensive coordinator for the 2020 Carolina Panthers, and DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and Curtis Samuel all went over 1,000 yards from scrimmage that season. And it's like, I mean, those guys were solid to good players. When you have solid to good players in this offense, you're going to get some passing production, unless Josh Allen plays a complete alien. That's like the long and short of it.
Well, of course. I mean, you could almost map what's happening to the Bills offense to the same thing that's happening, or that's been happening, to the Chiefs offense over this, especially this last season, where if you don't have Rashee Rice doing Rashee Rice things, or Travis Kelce in his prime having to rely on Hollywood Brown, I mean, any of the other guys, that role players that they've had to try and trot out there, this is the type of offense that you're going to get, where you're forcing your quarterback to be a Superman on a down-to-down basis. And then at some point, the dam is going to break, and you're going to be sitting there wondering, well, why is my quarterback not playing as well? Well, I'm pretty sure Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, I mean, both have been in the MVP conversation for quite some time. I'm pretty sure nothing's wrong with them. It might just be the guys that they're throwing passes to, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, these guys are not the problem. That's not to say that they have been perfect all throughout this, but the point of, like, this is football, man. You can't ask one guy to save you for 2 full seasons every single game. Especially now when Josh Allen is going for x-rays after the game. And he can say all he wants that didn't affect him on Sunday. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But it's just, again, I it looked like it did. Like, watching the game, it looked like it affected him. And that's just the point here, is that you can't have one guy just save you for 2 straight seasons. Okay, like, at some point, you've got to increase the margin for error. And there's no margin for error in that Bills offense. And I think you saw it today against a really good Eagles defense. And I have a bad feeling that you're going to see it at least one more time when we get to the NFL playoffs here, because this Bills team they're not going to win the division, but they are going to the playoffs. Let's talk the next and final game here of this segment, which is Jaguars 23, Colts 17. Jaguars, man, really impressive. This stat from Jaguars PR: Jaguars coach Liam Cohen is the only first-year head coach in NFL history to win 12-plus games after taking over a team with 4 or fewer wins the season prior. You know they're excited to hype up their coach when they're willing to dunk on last year's team to do it. So Jaguars very excited about Liam Cohen, and I think for very good reason.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, this is now, I mean, the third game in a row we've seen like Trevor Lawrence, not just from a passing standpoint, but also from a rushing standpoint, get there from in fantasy, from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, third now most touches for Lawrence in a single game this season. I mean, two of them coming in the red zone. Lawrence now has the third most touches of any quarterback once they get into the red zone. I mean, fourth game with double digit fantasy points just as a rusher. I mean, if we've talked now throughout the different parts of the season about, well, where's Trevor Lawrence at as a passer? How is he fitting into this Liam Cohen offense? And yeah, given where the injuries to the wide receivers have been, the trade for Jacoby Myers, now getting Brian Thomas Jr. back healthy. I mean, things have now started to click offensively now that he has most of his pass catchers healthy. But the underlying current to all that has been how Trevor Lawrence has been able to create with his legs. So yeah, it's good to see still the passing acumen still being there. And we can talk about the wide receivers here in a little bit. But the thing that I've been taking away from each of these games so far is how, I would say, trustworthy Liam Cohen has for Lawrence as a rusher. When we saw the same thing from Baker Mayfield over the last couple of seasons in Tampa when Liam Cohen was there, and now mapping over that same style and those same tendencies in using Lawrence's frame and rushing ability now to really accentuate his game and keep the Jaguars in contention as we saw earlier today.
Yeah, I think that's a great point by you. Like, I don't think that's a coincidence that Baker Mayfield really got unlocked as a scrambler in Tampa Bay. Obviously, Liam Cohen is his play caller in 2024. He was also his play caller in that brief little stint in 2022 with the Rams. Not play caller, but he was the offensive coordinator. Obviously, Sean McVay calls plays. But I always said this, that Baker, and listen, we'll talk about Baker later. Not having second half of the season.
It's tough.
Baker Mayfield. But he got his career kind of on track when he really just started pulling the ripcord and scrambling right up the gut, as opposed to doing that stupid bail out the right move that he would do all the time with the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing Trevor Lawrence do those same things here now. Career high 9 rushing touchdowns this season for Trevor Lawrence. He is 10th in the NFL in quarterback rushing yards, and he trails only Josh Allen in rushing touchdowns with those 9. And I thought today against the Blitz, 13 of 18 for 10.6 yards per attempt. That's another like evolution for Trevor Lawrence here. Just having confidence in the system. Like, oh, I'm getting some extra heat. Here's where that replacement player is. Like, here's where the outlet is. Being able to find that comfort in the system, I thought was very noticeable by Trevor Lawrence. You mentioned the pass catchers. I want to talk about that here for a second. So since week 15, Brian Thomas Jr. has run around 83% of the dropbacks. He's very much playing a borderline sacrificial X receiver role. Team high 15.4 air yards per target. Doesn't do much in this game. Didn't do much in the week prior against two really good cornerback units there. Sauce Gardner was back for this game. He didn't finish the game, but he was back for it for the most part. Jacoby Myers leads the team in routes, leads the team in targets, all of that since he has been there. Of course, we know that. But Parker Washington, since week 15, leads this group in targets per route and 3.4 yards per route as the slot receiver in this offense. Man, Parker Washington has been putting on a show here, especially the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, because if you had told me last week, or at least the grand takeaway from a lot of folks from last week's game when they played against the Broncos was that, all right, well, PS2 is going to be on either Brian Thomas Jr. or Jacoby Myers. And so Parker Washington is going to see Riley Moss. That's where you're going to see Washington have a career day from a receiving standpoint. And I would have completely believed that. And I would have been, okay, well, we can't really assume that he's going to get the same type of volume and produce the same as we had just seen in week 16. Nope, not the case. I mean, 10 targets, 115 yards. I mean, he really is doing a lot of the same stuff, at least from a production standpoint that Jacoby Myers was doing in his first couple, like 2, 3, 4 weeks when he was with the Jaguars. So yeah, seeing Myers shift a bit more out to the onto the perimeter, playing that flanker role opposite Brian Thomas Jr. has really let Parker Washington move into the slot as a more full-time route runner and receiver for this offense. And that's where I would assume this consistency in terms of how often he's getting targeted, how comfortable Trevor Lawrence is. I mean, Lawrence on third down today, 9 attempts, 6 completions, and 5 first downs or a touchdown. I mean, that level of, I would say, how often and how much he's able to get into rhythm with his offense and access each of his pass catchers is really how you see a guy like Parker Washington continue not just the volume, but the production as well.
Let's flip this to the other side and talk about the Colts, who were officially eliminated from playoff contention on Saturday with the Texans win over the Chargers. Yet Phillip Rivers still started this game. I would guess it's his last start of the season. I feel like we'll see Riley Leonard in week 18. we'll see what happens with his coaching staff, the front office, the whole deal, because obviously the season has ended on a very disappointing note. Just what we saw in this game here, Rivers took 68.5% snaps from the shotgun in this one. He was above 92% in both of his first two starts for this team. And I think that did have some significant fallout from move here. Rivers, I don't think, looks comfortable dropping back from under center, which, of course, like, he's 5 years out from the NFL right now. Any sort of movement from him is a difficulty. And I think that showed up in the passing stats. Next Gen Stats noted that Rivers was much more effective throwing between the seams, 13 of 20 for 110 yards and a touchdown. Outside the numbers, 4 of 9 for 37 yards and an interception. Was more successful on in-breaking routes than out-breaking routes as well, which I think just kind of lines up with where Rivers is at this point.
Yeah, and you can kind of feel that, especially with Alec Pierce having a bagel in his box score today, even though he had five targets. Yeah. So, I mean, it was more of a distributed passing attack. I mean, six targets for Jonathan Taylor and pretty much five across the board for the rest of the guys that we care about. I know Michael Pittman, he left the game earlier with a calf injury. He wound up returning, but still just not enough production there, especially with the types of routes that you would typically see for those guys. So outside of, seeing the type of the volume for those guys was great to see, but kind of to your point, if they are, well, they were trying to switch some things up in terms of how often Rivers was under center. I mean, it helped Jonathan Taylor quite a bit seeing him get into the end zone, but from a pass catching standpoint, it just didn't seem like he was comfortable enough in that offense to make the same types of throws that we'd seen in primetime just last week.
Yeah, just not a lot there, and I think that we can leave it at that. I mean, the Rivers thing was really fun for a minute there. It just, there was a very low limited ceiling to it. And I think if you're being honest with that, you felt it even as he was having some exciting moments, especially against the Niners on Monday night. You mentioned Jonathan Taylor. He's averaged more than 3.6 yards per carry just once since the bye, but he did get into the end zone today. So if you had him in your fantasy football championship, congratulations. You at least escaped this one with a touchdown. That does it for the games we care about most. And we'll be back with more right after this quick break. Now let's get into the games that we sort of care about here, starting with Seahawks 27, Panthers 10. On the Seahawks side of this one, Chris, the run game showed up today. Kenneth Walker had a couple of moments, but it was Zach Charbonnet with 18 carries, 110 yards, and two rushing touchdowns, which, in my opinion, really helped break this offense out of a bit of a funk to start this game.
Yeah, and still, I know a lot of folks, after seeing Kenneth Walker breaking tackles and creating explosives last week, were hoping to see some of the same, and the opportunity was certainly there. I mean, 15 carries, like you just mentioned, for Kenneth Walker. They both got a couple of targets, but again, the thing that I've been harping on for probably the last 4 to 5 weeks, contextualized usage for these running backs. I mean, once they got into the red zone, it was almost all, I mean, Zach Charbonnet, 100% of the snaps from inside of the 10. That's how he winds up with his touchdown. Really just 22% snap rate for Kenneth Walker once they got into the red zone. So you could see that shift, and we also noted that throughout most of the season that Zach Charbonnet, he's the one they use once they get into scoring position. Ken Walker is that guy that, unless he's really scoring from outside of the red zone, he really doesn't have enough opportunities to get there from a fantasy standpoint.
If only they were one person, they'd be
that'd be so much easier. Just running team back. Running back. Just give me that guy.
Yeah, I'd have been a great pick for anybody in drafts this year. On the Panthers side of it, career day for Bryce Young, derogatory. Bryce Young posted the worst adjusted yards per attempt of his NFL career, 0.38 adjusted yards per attempt against the Seahawks in week 17, and second worst EPA per dropback of his career at -0.54, which, I mean, that's saying something, man. There's a lot, like, if you saw the stat on the screen, you're seeing a lot of 2023. You're seeing a lot of Bryce Young rookie season in terms of his worst adjusted yards per attempt. And for him to have that game in week 17, look, it's a buzzsaw, right? This Seahawks defense is nasty. They've got some issues, of course, on that Panthers offense. We mentioned McMillan came in here with an illness. They're obviously just not ready. They're not ready to compete with a team like Seattle, even if they make it into the playoffs because they beat the Bucs in week 18, because the Bucs lost this week as well. This team is, I think, trending in the right direction. They ain't ready to hang with some of the big boys yet.
No, and they straight up baited Bryce Young into the interception because it looked like Julian Love, safety, looked like he played up and he was going to be covering Chuba Hubbard coming out of the flat. But then as soon as Bryce Young made the decision to throw over to Tedrick McMillan, Julian Love just slides back into coverage and winds up picking him off. I mean, it's just one of those. I mean, what are you going to do, man? I mean, when your coverage reads you, knows your quarterback's tendencies just enough, they can play these types of schematic advantages like over your quarterback. I mean, but yeah, looking at how often Bryce Young, like when he was kept clean, all right, solid day. I mean, that interception was from a clean pocket, but 71.4% completion rate, 57.1% passing success rate when kept clean. But that was, I mean, yeah, I mean, close to 40% pressure rate on the day. So when he was under duress, 40% completion rate, 2 sacks, no first downs. So it really was just another rough day, especially going up into his coverage unit, which, I mean, we had seen throughout most of the season. I mean, outside of, unless you're playing against the Matt Stafford Rams, you're probably going to have a tough day against the Seattle Seahawks.
The Panthers, specifically Tedrick McMillan, will be interesting to talk about in the offseason when it comes to fantasy football, because I guess they're going to run it back with – my guess is they're running it back with Bryce Young next year. Like, especially if they win the division, he's probably going to be the starting quarterback again this year. And, you know, like, we kind of know what the Bryce experience is at this point. That's not to say that he can't improve in his future seasons, but I think it will be really interesting to see where McMillan comes down from an ADP perspective in 2026. Like, do you have a read on that as to how you might feel about him next season? Because I think we can all agree, like, McMillan is a good player. I think, you know, what his ceiling is still to be determined, because he's had some, I think you categorized it really well. I think he has had a solid rookie season so far, has Tedrick McMillan. I wouldn't say that he looks like the next Ja'Marr Chase or anything like that, but he has had a solid rookie season. What is a solid wide receiver one for the Carolina Panthers worth in 2026? Like, that will be an interesting discussion.
First number, at least in terms of a round that came to my mind, sixth round, maybe somewhere in there.
I bet it will be higher than that. You know, like he just second year receiver. These guys get steamed up the board. He's got really good, you know, per route metric. Well, I don't know, after one freaking, you know, point today, maybe he won't.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking more towards the middle rounds, just because this is going to be the thing that people are going to keep in their minds. And so at the start of the offseason, I could see him being more of like a fifth or sixth rounder. But then kind of to your point, let's say they make some additions along the offensive line. The Dave Canales is on podcasts. And of course, Eric Eager, who's been like an excellent analyst, who now works with Carolina, talking about how they're going to make some changes to the scheme. And Dave Canales talking about how he's going to help improve Bryce Young. I could see him getting steamed up into like the early fifth, late fourth, early fourth throughout the rest of the offseason. I could see that for Tet for sure.
Yeah, we'll be really interesting to track, because I could talk myself both ways on this team, where like Bryce is what he is and that's that. But there's a lot of young players on this offense. You know, the quarterback is still young in his career, relatively. Like, he's not really at the point where quarterbacks are in their prime yet. Their number one receiver is a rookie this year. Their number two receiver is an undrafted rookie from the year before. And like, I think Coker and McMillan are the two, like the one and two to build around, but they could use some help at three and four, you know, stuff like that. So we'll tight end, like, that's a spot they could maybe make an upgrade. So a lot of potential changes for this Panthers team. But again, they might win the NFC South, because it's all going to come down to that Week 18 matchup. The Bucks blew it once again. The whole talking point about the Bucks this week was, well, you know what? They've at least got a nice, easy matchup against Quinn Ewers and the boys. The Panthers, they got to play the Seahawks. Well, guess what? The Bucks lost once again. Bucks lose. They get 17 points. The Dolphins get 20. I want to talk about the Dolphins here real quick, and I think the Bucks are more probably interesting conversation, but this offense, I think, was like quietly excellent against the Bucks defense relative to expectations. Quinn Ewers carved up zone coverage, which he faced on 83% of his dropbacks. He went 12 of 19 for 174 yards and both of his touchdowns against zone coverage. He threw the touchdowns to I can't even remember the guy's name.
Theo
Greg Dulcich got the second. Theo Weiss got the first one, long catch and run, and then it was Greg Dulcich who had the second one. So I'm sure those guys were in everybody's anytime touchdown parlays this week. That's how the Dolphins offense got it done. And the run game was very effective as well.
I saw the touchdown notification come across my phone, and I was like, who in the world is T. Weiss? Like, what is happening right now? And of course, Jalen Waddle gets hurt. hurt his ribs. He came back into the game, didn't catch a target throughout the remainder of the game. So, of course, if you're even hoping that things would get better for Waddle in week 17, of course they did not. But yeah, a much better, I would say, just overall game script or game environment for Quinn Ewers, where he's not having, it's not put into a trailing script because he's facing off against Joe Burrow and my Bengals last week. It's now something a bit more controlled. So cool that they wound up getting that 63-yard explosive catch for a touchdown with Weiss. But then afterwards, because the Bucs were still having so many problems on offense, it was easier for him to just continue to just not necessarily dink and dunk. He was averaging around like 7-8 air yards per attempt, but at least still be aggressive enough and maintain some of that down-to-down consistency from a passing success rate standpoint that they are able to continue just control the game, keep ahead of the chains, and then can just continue to either rely on Quinn Ewers as a passer, but definitely Devon Achane as a runner who puts up, I mean, just again, another solid day from a scrimmage yard standpoint.
That Theo Weiss thing, no wonder I forgot his name because it was so tilting, because I actually thought Jalen Waddle could have a nice game here, and it was pretty much all on the analysis of, well, you know, Bucks, like, they can get beat when you blitz and they're in single coverage. They do give up a lot of production to outside wide receivers. And of course, Jalen Waddle gets hurt, and it felt like, I think on the very next play, it was Theo Weiss, 63-yard touchdown. It's like, that was supposed to be Jalen Waddle. So sure. That was definitely that drove me crazy for sure. The Bucks offense, watching them is driving me crazy at this point. And I mean, I'm not sure like where you want to go here. There's a lot of negativity on this one. And I feel like we can start maybe on the Bucky Irving part of this. I had my concerns about Bucky Irving in this one. I ended up starting him in a fantasy championship anyways. Team's still going to win thanks to Malik Willis and Drake May, so don't have to feel bad for me about that one. But I knew the risk was Bucky Irving, and it was as bad as it could have gotten. Still getting nipped in the pass catching department, still getting nipped at the goal line, but man, he also felt he was really frustrated in this game, too. There were shots of him kind of yelling at the offensive line, like rolling his eyes at times on the field. It was just it's not been a good return to action here for Bucky Irving, I would say, since he's gotten back.
Yeah, and I think there was a discussion shortly thereafter. I think beat reporter was talking with Tristan Wirfs, saying like, "Hey, what was going on?" Yes. Looked like there was a spat going on. So a little bit of frustration with the Bucs, and especially their run game. I mean, 9 rushing attempts for Bucky Irving, hit behind the line of scrimmage on 6 of those attempts. So that's probably why they wound up saying, "Well, let's screw it. We'll try and get there from a passing standpoint." So at least, couple of targets there for Bucky. But still, I mean, that production that we expected to be there for him, at least once he came back from injury, and now a lot of that role has been shifted over to Rashad White from a pass catching standpoint. I mean, 0 snaps from inside the 10-yard line for Bucky Irving in this game. We saw more of Sean Tucker once the Bucks did get into scoring position. So yeah, I don't know how this is going to... I'm just assuming this was going to be a ton of changes coming for the Bucs in general for 2026. So yeah, Let's hope that works out for Bucky Irving. But for right now, I mean, it's just tough to see like the guy that we thought all of those touches were condensed around. Really, that role has just been distributed out to 2 other running backs.
Oh, man, we'll see what happens with this Bucs team. There were reports today, I believe, from Pro Football Talk that there's not expected to be changes, or maybe it was Ian Rapoport that had this, that Todd Bowles is not in danger of getting fired, which I don't know. Okay. We'll see what happens here. Baker Mayfield, once again, 1 of 7 for 33 yards and 2 interceptions on passes beyond 20 air yards in this game. He was not under pressure very often, but he completed just 1 pass under pressure, took 3 sacks, including a sack fumbled that ultimately ended the fourth quarter drive there. So, it's been a bad back half of the season for Baker Mayfield. It's been a bad half of the season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who just look like they can't wait for their season to be over.
Yeah, and first target for Emeka Ibuka didn't come until the third quarter. He's essentially splitting routes with Jalen McMillan. I mean, McMillan, who winds up almost leading the team in terms of catches at this point. It played really well, but yes, it was just that at the expense of Ibuka, who we all thought, especially coming into this season, was going to be one of their premier wide receivers, or at the very least, a guy that they were going to continue to keep into the rotation when Mike Evans and Chris Godwin come back. But no, we see, I mean, Ibuka... I have Next Gen Stats. They had him up for 27 routes, 28 for Jalen McMillan, whereas Godwin and Evans were up at 41 and 42 for both of their wide receiver ones. So, yeah, it's just confusion along how Baker Mayfield's playing. I mean, severely underthrown interception to Jalen McMillan, but now also now having to see this rotation between, I mean, yeah, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, those guys are safe, but now this wide receiver three role being split between McMillan and Egbuka. But yeah, just not something that I expected to see, especially coming into the season.
All right, next game up here, Saints 34, Titans 26. On the Saints side of it, Tyler Shuck does it again, baby. Another great game here in a good matchup, of course, against the Titans defense for Tyler Shuck. But I thought he had a number of really impressive throws once again here. I said this on social media that the thing that he does that impresses me most is from like the far hash, he just is able to really push that ball deep outside the numbers. He had his both of his touchdowns, one to Chris Olave, one to Austin in this game, on those exact type of throws. Chris Olave continues to have a dynamic season here. Best season of his career for Chris Olave, obviously. And it, to me, the only, nothing changed with Chris Olave, who's always been talented enough to have one of these type of seasons. He's just playing in the best designed offense of his career, as I believe we talked about last week. And I think this is the quarterback that he's had the best chemistry with. I thought he had pretty nice chemistry with Spencer Rattler in certain areas, but it's more of a full field thing with Tyler Shuck here this week. So Chris Olave does it once again. Will go down as one of the heroes of the fantasy football playoffs in 2025.
Yeah, and honestly, it was kind of the tale of two halves for Tyler Shuck, because he just had 82 passing yards at the end of the first half, negative 0.09 EPA per dropback. But then, of course, once he gets into the hole, because Cam Ward has a couple of touchdown passes early on in this game, 251 passing yards, two touchdowns in the second half, 0.6 EPA per dropback. And I mean, the really only the downer in all of this, and we were talking about it quite a bit earlier this morning, was really not a lot of production going towards Taysom Hill, where it's 11 targets for Chris Olave, seeing Kevin Austin Jr. getting a few targets. I mean, Dante freaking Pettis getting 4 or 5 targets and also having a costly fumble, which almost cost him the game there because he fumbles out of the end zone. I mean, that was the thing that I was really the most surprised at, was how, not just the fact that they were going to distribute targets. I mean, I thought that was going to be a foregone conclusion with the number of injuries that they've sustained at the pass catching position over the past 2 to 3 weeks. But really, outside of having to rely on Juwan Johnson for chunk gains, he had 3 catches that wound up totaling over 20 yards on a reception standpoint. But yeah, having seen Kevin Austin Jr. getting involved, Dante Pettis, and not really seeing a ton go towards Taysom Hill, that was really the biggest shocking thing out of this entire game. Because, yeah, I mean, I called it earlier today. I said the Saints are going to be a wild card team in 2026. Tyler Shuck, Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, yeah, I saw this coming for sure. But the Taysom Hill part, that's still kind of confusing to me.
7 offensive snaps for Taysom Hill. He ran 3 routes in this one, did not receive a target, had a few rush attempts. It was a fantasy false flag. And we said this morning, like Nick Underhill had that report that just because they kind of gave him that victory lap in his final home game with the New Orleans Saints did not mean that he was going to continue to get that kind of usage. So definitely was a risky play. You mentioned this. The gap is closing between Cheddar and McMillan, who is still the favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, and Tyler Shuck. And Chris Olave was hyping up Shuck for that award after the game. Speaking of rookie quarterbacks, and the only thing that really is interesting from this game is this stat from Cam Ward. Next Gen Stats have this. Cam Ward averaged 4.07 seconds to throw in this game. That is the longest single game mark by any quarterback in the Next Gen Stats era, which goes back to 2016. On throws taking longer than 2.5 seconds, Ward went 13 of 28 for 208 yards in both of his touchdowns. I mean, that was the Cam Ward experience in this game, man. He was just holding on, trying to make something happen. And, you know, to his credit, sometimes he did make some things happen.
Yeah, he did. I mean, pressured on 52.2% of his dropbacks. Chase Young just like stole his lunch money on a scoop and score and wound up scoring for the Saints. Was really the biggest play for the Saints in that first half, was Chase Young stealing the ball from Cam Ward. But yeah, I mean, we talked a bit about it last week where Cam Ward, you can see some of the flashes there. You give him a little bit of time. And honestly, there were a couple of plays where he eludes pressure, winds up trying to make something happen and gets the ball over to either, whether it's Chim DK, Alec Ayomaner, who gets into the end zone here. I can see the young pass catching core for the Titans playing a bit better in 2026, but clearly there are some things that need to change, not just the offensive line, but also making some additions to that receiver room as well.
Oh, no question. They got to make a lot of changes around Cam Ward, but I think he's shown enough flashes to get excited about here late in the season. Let's go to the next game here. Browns 13, Steelers 6. I mean, Harold Fannin got into the end zone here for the Browns early and then left with a groin injury. That was a bummer because that was a pretty sweet play that he made on a pass that Shedeur Sanders threw up for him. I will just say, Chris, my one thought about this game, there was a lot of discourse online about, and I think Myles Garrett actually even alluded to this, that he felt that the Steelers were more concerned about not allowing him to break the sack record against them than they were with getting a win. And yeah, I'm glad you made that face because, yo, I mean, number one, this is the most listen, the Steelers, I was very down on them this year, and they have no doubt about it outkicked my expectations. But this is the most classic Tomlin loss ever. It's to an inferior team. It's in a spot where you could just tidily wrap up your playoff odds and just go in, sail into week 18 with nothing to play for. You rest some starters, whatever, and you lose to an inferior team. They lose in Cleveland so often, it's ridiculous. And also, like, oh yeah, they were getting the ball out quick and not pushing it down the field. Have you not watched the Steelers all season? That's all they do.
I don't understand, like, what did they expect? It's not like, I think Myles Garrett, or I think a couple of folks I saw talking online of, well, how quickly Aaron Rodgers has been getting the ball out every time he drops back to pass. He's been doing that the entire season.
You've
my
been
guys.
Doing that like, all this, year.
Yeah, he's been doing this park and bark thing pretty much the entire year, and that didn't matter if DK Metcalf was going to be on the field or not. I mean, honestly, the only surprising thing out of the entire, like, from a Steelers receiving production standpoint was that really just only seeing four targets to Kenny Gainwell, where he'd come in with six targets on the past few weeks. We were talking this morning, we're assuming that this is going to be essentially an alpha wide receiver type volume game for Kenneth Gainwell. So outside of that, I mean, yeah, so you're going to throw it to MVS 9 times. Scotty Miller gets 7 targets. I mean, that's
Scotty
certainly
Miller, come
I mean,
on.
That's certainly a choice. I mean, if you want to be mad about that, if you want to be mad about something about the Steelers offense, I'll be mad about that versus anything else. But no, I don't think there was really any concerted effort to get away from Myles Garrett. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has been playing that way throughout most of this season anyway.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I'm sure they didn't want Myles Garrett to break the sack record against them, but I don't think that they went out of their way to make sure that didn't happen in sacrifice of a win. This is how they've been winning all season. So they just didn't do it today because they faced a good defense and they do not have their number one wide receiver. Let's go to the next game here. Giants 34, Raiders 10. Congratulations, the Raiders. They've not wrapped it up, but they are in line for the number one overall pick after this loss to the New York Giants today. Today, which I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweet this out, and I listen, DJ and I are pals. Like, he never says anything, you know, that's too pointed, but for him to say, and this is a direct quote, having a bad team with a bunch of young players gaining experience and growing sure beats having a bad team with a bunch of washed up veteran guys hogging reps, which for DJ is about as mean as he's ever going to be publicly. And I was like, yeah, man, that's how I felt about this Raiders team all season. And it was definitely a stark contrast watching, you know, Geno Smith try to do whatever out there. He eventually gets ruled out with a high ankle sprain in this game. You've got Tyler Lockett and a bunch of whatever dudes playing for the Raiders offense. Meanwhile, Jackson Dart, like, actually had a couple of nice plays in this game, working with Wandale Robinson, a couple rushing touchdowns, one of which was definitely a designed rush attempt for Jackson Dart here. You gotta love how Jackson Dart lowers his head to go into the end zone, and then after the touchdown, butts everybody's head with his helmet here. I'm sure the Giants management absolutely loves that, but you gotta feel pretty good about seeing some nice moments from Dart as they easily win this game over the Raiders.
My one question for the Raiders, just looking at how often they were looking to Michael Mayer, where was this throughout the entirety of the year? It's not to say that Michael Mayer is the exact same as Brock Bowers. He's not the second coming of like Trey McBride or their version of Trey McBride or anything like that. But he's still a good player. I mean, he's still a solid pass catcher and capable of working not just in the short, but also intermediate parts of the field. Where was this throughout the rest of the season? But all right, whatever, Pete Carroll. I mean, you guys are going to do what you guys are going to do. And then, yeah, on the flip side, I mean, Jackson Dart, dude, please, you don't have to go head first into every single time that you have the ball. But also, I mean, shout out to Wandale Robinson. I mean, first wide receiver that's 5'8 to get 1,000 yards in a single season. I saw that stat being tossed around on social media throughout the game. So, I mean, solid outing from him, but the rest of that, it's just, let's just wait. Let's just fast forward to 2026. Let me see Malik Nabers catching passes from Jackson Dart in 2026.
You know what, though? Seriously, big time shout out to Wandale Robinson for doing that. And, you know, I've obviously had some fun at Wandale's expense in previous seasons, but I've said this on the show. I've said this on my site this year. He has played a lot better this year, and he's done some things that he did not previously do in terms of working as an outside receiver downfield. So shout out to him for getting that. And it is very fitting that, you know, I've tried over the years to not be a wide receiver sizist and, you know, not try to pigeonhole guys in certain roles just because of their height and their dimensions and everything. And for Wandale Robinson, a player that I've never really been that high on, to be the first 5'8 wide receiver to go for 1,000 yards, there's some like funny twist to that. So definitely big time shout out to Wandale Robinson, who's going to be a free agent this upcoming year. So could be somebody that people are interested in the open market. All right. That does it for the games that we sort of care about. And we're coming right back right after this quick break. Now let's get into the games that could have been an email. We've got two Sunday games and we've got the three Christmas games to talk about here. Rapid fire on the way out. Starting with Chris, your Bengals 37 over the Cardinals 14. The Bengals basically did whatever they wanted here. Meanwhile, Marvin Harrison only played 32% of the snaps for the Cardinals, did not finish the game. My two other thoughts were shout out to Trey McBride for, you know, having the record-breaking season in terms of the receptions for tight ends. And also, I can't wait to never talk about this particular Cardinals backfield ever again.
Here's hoping. Yeah, Cincinnati was able to do pretty much whatever they wanted. 12-play, 72-yard drive in order to start the game. Follow that up with a 12-play, 79-yard drive, and it was essentially Joe Burrow just completely ripping up zone coverage, man coverage, whatever they had for them. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase gets there, of course, and now he's the first receiver with 80 catches, 1,000 yards, and 7 touchdowns in his first 5 seasons. I mean, of course, and the big play from this game, and we're kind of bearing the lead there, Cody Ford on his birthday, big man, yeah, winds up lining up out wide, catches a pass, and then goes for 21 yards. I mean, it was just, I think at that point, pretty much all of the beat reporters on either side were just like, all right, well, the Bengals are, they're just playing around at this point. So yeah, second game in a row now, we've seen Joe Flacco come in to close out this game. So no, fun to see this Bengals offense clicking as it should. Just, at least from a fan perspective, wish we'd been able to see that in the earlier parts of the season.
Yeah, great stat here we're showing from Dante Kopflem on Twitter. Cody Ford listed 345 pounds as the heaviest player in NFL history to have a 20-plus yard play from scrimmage. So shout out to Cody Ford. Happy birthday, big fella. Let's talk through the next game we've got here. Patriots 42, Jets 10. Oh my God, this was uncompetitive does not even begin to do it justice. Drake May was pulled with 5 minutes left in the third quarter because this was such a blowout. And at the time, he was sitting on a 90% completion rate and 5 freaking passing touchdowns.
You know how we always try and use the EPA per dropback as a stat. And most of the times you will say if we're a quarterback in a game, it's the number that we're going to usually give for a quarterback's EPA per dropback typically starts with a zero. Drake May's EPA per dropback was 1.28 in this game. That doesn't even make sense.
Oh, baby.
I mean, and also
just drop back, put a point on the board.
Exactly. That's how easy it was for him. But I mean, if folks that watched the game or looked at the box score, I mean, that the most of the plays that we were hoping would get there, I mean, would got there. I mean, Stephon Diggs gets there, plays more of a full-time role in this game. Absolutely mossed a guy down the left sideline for a 31-yard gain. Whether it was like Hunter Henry that folks thought they were used as a streaming tight end, he winds up getting there. I mean, really the only concern was what happened in the backfield. But of course, I mean, going up against this Jets defense, like everybody thought that this was going to be a way for at least all of our options to get there. It really was just Travion Henderson that was the one that was more or less left out in terms of the fantasy production across the board for the Patriots today.
Yeah, in the first half, Travion Henderson was on the field for 50% of the snaps. He had 8 routes. He led the team with 12 carries. Stevenson just made the plays. Like, that's what happened in this game. That Stevenson made plays. Henderson didn't really make the plays today. And obviously, I was surprised he even played in this game coming off the concussion protocol. So I'm sure we'll see bigger things from Henderson as we get into the NFL postseason. This team is really fun. They're just surgical on offense when they're going. And the only thing notable for the Jets is that Breece Hall went over 1,000 rushing yards for the New York Jets, which first Jets running back to do that since Chris Ivory in 2015. It's been a decade since the Jets have had a 1,000-yard rusher. And I wouldn't even say that Breece Hall has had like a good season. So it was crazy to hear that stat today. Let's talk through the Christmas games here, Chris Allen, starting with Cowboys 30, Commanders 23. Josh Johnson makes his start for the 30th NFL team. It feels like he's started for every team at this point. However, it was the Cowboys doing pretty much what they wanted in this game, which unfortunately wasn't getting a ton of production to their top two wide receivers. It was Kevontae Turpin with the big play, 86-yard receiving touchdown against that Commanders hapless defense.
Yeah, and once I think on those types of slates where you're just everybody, each game is on an island, you're almost assuming that there's going to be some random play or some random wide receiver that most folks haven't talked about. I mean, honestly, we were talking earlier about that Chargers Texans game where it's like, oh, Jalen Noel winds up going for a long game. And of course, the Cowboys have their own version of that with Kevontae Turpin streaking across the middle of the field and going for an 86-yard score. So, I mean, it's just those types of games where, yeah, we were hoping a bit more for CeeDee Lamb. I mean, yeah, he gets 10 targets, but like we were talking earlier today, it's just if a couple of those passes had just been this better, a little bit better placement from Dak Prescott, CeeDee would definitely have had either a 100-yard game or at the very least a score there. So, yeah, I mean, George Pickens winds up at least giving you an okay day on a couple of in-breakers that he was able to take for a couple of chunk gains. But outside of that, it really was just, let's just get Kevontae Turpin. He winds up getting the long score. And then, of course, after that, it's just whatever they can wind up getting on the ground from Malik Davis and Javonte Williams.
Yeah, and on the ground on the other side of it, Corey Crosky-Merritt, 100 yards, two touchdowns here, as Chris Rodriguez was a late scratch in illness, had him inactive on Christmas. So Corey Crosky-Merritt was able to assume the duties there. And he, if you started him in your fantasy championship, congratulations, because he had a big game against the Dallas Cowboys. Let's talk the next Christmas game here. Vikings 23, Lions 10. The Lions, it's over for them, and it ended in a pretty pitiful fashion here. That passing game was taken to the woodshed. They can't run the ball. It's just so crazy to see a Lions team. And look, I think there's going to be a lot of, I think, over-analysis about, oh, the Lions, what's wrong? Dan Campbell's a Ben Johnson merchant, whatever. They're just so banged up on the offensive line. They already had personnel turnover, and now they have injuries. They're just, like, not the same team up front.
No, not at all. And we had talked earlier in the past couple of weeks about essentially how Jahmyr Gibbs, outside of the explosive plays, he really wasn't doing it on a down-to-down standpoint. I mean, his rushing success rate had fallen down into the 30-40% range. Even David Montgomery, who had been admirable in some of those same situations, also was getting hit behind the line of scrimmage at a fairly high rate as well. So plenty of frustration. And I know folks have been talking about some social media clips around how David Montgomery hasn't been at least vibing with the team and some other things going on behind the scenes. But again, I mean, it's just a tough season, especially this is a season where we thought they were still going to be able to contend, and it looked like it throughout the earlier parts of the year. But to your point, I mean, with the number of defensive injuries they sustained yet again this season, and also the stuff along the offensive line, I mean, it's really hard to produce, or any team should be able to produce, when you have to deal with that many ailments on either side of the ball.
Yeah, and on the Vikings, I mean, bizarre box score from them, bizarre game as well. Max Brosmer didn't do much, 9 of 16 for under 60 yards passing. Jordan Addison had one carry for 65 yards and a touchdown. He obviously led the team in rushing on that one carry. So, bizarre day for a bizarre season for the Minnesota Vikings. Final game to talk about here, Broncos 20, Chiefs 13. This was a slog of a football game, a dink and dunk fest. You got 4.8 yards per attempt for Bo Nix, which is somehow more than Chris Oludokun, who had 3 yards per attempt in this game. So I don't know, Chris. To be honest, didn't watch a lot of this game on Christmas night. So, I watched it, but at one point you're like, okay, I don't know that there's a lot to see here.
No, there's not a ton to see there. And of course, folks that started Bo Nix in their championship, while he winds up throwing the interception and not really getting there from a passing standpoint, which we all thought with the number of defensive injuries that the Chiefs had sustained, that he was really going to be like the same passer that we'd saw over the past couple of weeks. But yeah, at least he got there. He winds up getting a rushing score to pad his stats from a fantasy standpoint. But of course, I mean, good to see Cortland Sutton still being the wide receiver one, 10 targets in this game. But yeah, it's just one of those games where it's like, let's just kind of push this off to the side. And of course, for Denver, I mean, they already have postseason aspirations, so not taking it too much to heart, especially even if they were going up against an easier Chiefs defense.
RJ Harvey, though, that was pretty great to see him have a receiving touchdown. So been a nice end of the season for RJ Harvey, especially from a pass catching standpoint. Good to see that from him. That's going to do it. Week 17, Chris Allen is in the books. Hopefully everyone out there had some success in their fantasy football championships. Appreciate you chopping it up with me as always, man.
Of course, man. Hopefully we get to do it again next season. We'll see how things go. But no, man, this has been fun exercise week in and week out to be able to try and at least instantly react to each of the games. And hopefully that brought folks a couple of championships this year as well. So yeah, it's a ton of fun, and hopefully we get to do it again next year.
No doubt about it, man. Chris, you know, I got a lot of love for you, pal, and it's been great to have you on the show this year, both on Fantasy Football Live in the morning and for these live recaps on Sunday. It's been great to have you here and really appreciate it. I know the people appreciated you being here as well, so it was awesome. Really enjoyed it. And this does mark the conclusion of our daily 5 days a week live at 5 p.m. every single day. It marks the end of that here. Week 17, the fantasy season is officially over. So we're going to have some updates in terms of our scheduling and everything like that. But for tomorrow, Justin Boone will still be on the show. However, a little bit of a different twist here. That show is going to be a little bit of a bonus special episode. We're going to start it right after Monday Night Football. So we're going to recap the massive Falcons Rams game. We're also going to dive into some year-end fantasy awards, some superlatives. That's going to go live right after Monday Night Football wrap. So stay tuned to this YouTube channel. Subscribe, of course, Yahoo Fantasy. You can check it out on social media as well. That show is going to be live tomorrow. Until then, we are out.